For decades now, newspaper editors have fretted about younger readers. To be more accurate, they've fretted about the lack of younger readers. You know the story. Kids don't grow up looking at the paper, so they don't look at it when they're teenagers, and when they leave home to make their own way in the world, they haven't got the paper reading habit. Young people just aren't interested in news, has been the despairing conclusion. But Lynn Schofield-Clark, a media scholar at the University of Denver, says it isn't that simple.
We tend to have two theories about the way young people interact with news. On the one hand, we think about young people as not at all interested in news. And we have a lot of research that backs up the fact that young people don't necessarily tune in, whether it involves radio or watching television or especially reading the newspaper, with our traditional legacy news sources. On the other hand, there is a lot of research that's emerging that's looking at how we have thought about news in relation to citizenship. And because there are new models of citizenship emerging, there are also new ways of thinking about news that are emerging. And that's an area that I'm especially interested in, because I think when you start to look at young people and what they think of as news and what they think is important for their communities, however they define them, they do have a stake in that. I think it's different, though, than what we think about in relation to legacy news.
Right. So legacy news, traditionally, things like the economy, what's happening in terms of national or local politics, perhaps sport, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You're talking, though, about a different category of what young people are defining as news. So the things they're interested in that relate to being a good citizen.
Yes, I think so. I can give you an example.
I have
been working with a number of high schools in the Denver area. A couple of years ago, one of our high schools in the area had a protest that was going to be happening on the grounds by a group that is known to be very much against gay lesbian unions. And the people in the high school got word of this protest that was going to happen on their grounds. This protest was scheduled for 7:30 in the morning. And by 7 in the morning, there was a huge crowd of 400 students who had assembled themselves to do a counter protest to try to make a demonstration about the fact that they felt that they were a community that embraced tolerance and difference. So I think that's kind of an interesting example of, and it's a different way of thinking about news.
It's about issues like identity and prejudice.
Exactly, right.
Rather than whether you're in deficit or how big the national debt is.
Right. Well, and I think that's true. I mean, I think one of the things to remember about that is we can't necessarily expect someone who's 15, 16 years old to give the same level of concern with issues that would be of concern to somebody who's 40. But they are going to be very concerned about the issues that affect them in their daily lives. And there are issues that intersect. For instance, in the Denver area, immigration is a huge issue that makes a big difference in terms of how the student body looks within particular urban schools. And it also, of course, makes a big difference in terms of national policy. Those are things that then become sources of concern for young people, and they feel like they want to be informed and be involved. And so I think one of the things that's happening is that we're starting to need to redefine news, not just as something that is a product that comes about from somebody else that is delivered to people of various ages, but something in which communities are engaged in producing. And then also by producing it, that news creates a way for us to think about who we are as a public together and how we want to go forward.
Right. So they're still news consumers, but what they think of as news is perhaps different to what the mainstream media has traditionally done as news. But they're also, you're saying, news creators and participants.
I hope so. I mean, the thing that's interesting to me, I guess, is I've been focusing my efforts in particular on young people who largely come from disadvantaged backgrounds. And in the United States, as you probably know, there's a rising economic inequality that's happening in the United States. And so that means that young people who come from less advantaged backgrounds don't necessarily have the same sense of participation. They may not feel like the legacy media, the traditional news media sources, have ever told their stories. They don't have an SBS, for instance, in the U.S. And so among young people who come from less advantaged backgrounds, they feel that their own stories of their communities have always come from less formal sources. And so now this is something that is continuing, I think, through new media.
One of the things we do know, and there's been quite a lot of research on this, is that a lot of people, not just young people, get their news via social media. Mm-hmm. It's a dim and distant past for me, but I do remember how much you value other people's opinions,
absolutely,
your peers. How does that shape that interaction with news, with social media now making it so easy to say, look at this?
I think the thing that has happened that seems to be really significant when we look at generational shifts is that it's no longer where you get the news from, but who told you about it. And the difference then is, instead of looking to the New York Times, for instance, or to CNN or some of the other major news sources in the United States context, people are getting their first news source from Facebook or from Twitter, and those come from people or individuals or organizations that they recognize. And that gives a particular story legitimacy. And I found that again and again when I was interviewing young people, that they would say, oh, I don't really need to read the news, the headlines even. I just need to follow my Twitter feed, because if something happens, it'll start showing up in my feed, and then I'll know to go to another news source to follow up. And that's a real change, I think. I mean, I think there's always been word of mouth in which people have heard about events that are unfolding, but this means that social media has come to play a really significant role. And that puts in the driver's seat people who kind of define themselves as opinion leaders within differing kinds of issues, in relation to different issues or in relation to different organizations and news subjects.
This is something that news professionals are already grappling with, how to get recommended on social media. And mm-hmm. some have become very good at kind of gaming the Facebook algorithm or that kind of approach. Yeah. But this has widespread implications. Mm-hmm. The things you've identified, which is that young people are interested in mostly different subjects mm-hmm. to what traditional news has been, that they're just as happy to generate the news and make it and then share it with their friends as they are to get it any other way, and that social media is increasingly important. All of this adds up to lots of thinking for the mainstream news media, doesn't it?
It does. It's a real challenge. And I mean, I think that as we're grappling with this, I think we need to start looking at different kinds of models. And that again kind of solves one problem, because it's looking at the business aspect. It still doesn't address the issue of what are we going to do about these communities that have a large number of young people and a growing number of young people who have traditionally been disconnected from news industries. How do we actually build those bridges?
That's the question, I reckon. Lynn Schofield-Clark of the University of Denver. More information on everything on the website, abc.net.au/radionational. Thanks to producer Kyla Slaven and our peerless sound engineer, Paul Gough. I'm Richard Ady. Coming up next on RN, Breakfast.